This is Wendy Bauer returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, October 5th, 2015. We will continue now with the obituaries. Shirley M. Milestone. Shirley M. Milestone of Shelbyville, Illinois, passed away at 11:45 a.m. Saturday, October 3rd, 2015 at Shelbyville Manor. Visitation will be Tuesday, October 6th, 2015, from 5 p.m. until 8 p.m. at Lockhart Green Funeral Home in Shelbyville, and Wednesday, 9 a.m. until 10 a.m. at Cornerstone Community Fellowship Church. Funeral services will be Wednesday, 10 a.m. at Cornerstone Community Fellowship Church. Mary Olive Meisenheimer. Mary Olive Meisenheimer, 102, of Tolono, Illinois, formerly of Decatur, Illinois, passed away on October 3, 2015, in her residence. Graveside services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, October 6, 2015, in Marrowbone Township Cemetery, Bethany, Illinois. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion, is assisting the family with arrangements. Memorials may be made to the Harbor Light Hospice. Kenneth W. Reynolds. Kenneth W. Bun Reynolds, 80, of Shelbyville, Illinois, died at 9:55 p.m. Friday, October 2, 2015, in Hawthorne Inn, Shelbyville, Illinois. Funeral services will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. Wednesday, October 7th, in Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, Illinois. Visitation will be held from 12 to 2 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. Burial will be in Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville, Illinois, with military rites by the Shelby County Honor Guard. Memorials may be given to the Shelby County Honor Guard. Casual attire is requested. Brenda K. Beavers. Brenda K. Beavers, age 78, of Mattoon, Illinois, formerly of Sullivan, Illinois, passed away on Wednesday, September 30, 2015, 1:17 p.m., at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon, Illinois. Graveside services will be held at Green Hill Cemetery in Sullivan, Illinois, on Tuesday, October 6, 2015, at 10 o'clock a.m. Mitchell Jordan Funeral Home is presiding over arrangements. Memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's Association of Greater Illinois, 8430 West Bryn Mawr, Suite 800, Chicago, 60631. James Douglas Brewer. James Douglas Brewer, 52, of Decatur, passed away Wednesday, September 30, 2015, at his home. Services to celebrate the life of Doug Brewer will be 10 a.m. Thursday, October 8, 2015, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 7th at the funeral home. Burial will be in Fairlawn Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the family to be designated later. D. Ann Burwell. D. Ann Burwell, 69, of Shelbyville, Illinois, died at 5:29 a.m. Thursday, October 1st, 2015, in Heritage Manor, Pena, Illinois. Family graveside services were held in the afternoon on Saturday, October 3rd, 2015, in Glenwood Cemetery. Arrangements were made by Howe and Yaki Funeral Home. Memorials may be given to Autism Speaks. Eldita Ann Curry. Eldita Ann Curry, age 57, of Michigan City, Indiana, passed away on Friday, October 2, 2015, at her home in Michigan City, Indiana. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Geisen Carlisle Funeral and Cremation Services in Michigan City, Indiana. Memorial contributions may be given to Freed's Cat Shelter in Michigan City, Indiana. Eileen Luster. Eileen Luster, 94, of Tuscola, Illinois, passed away at 10 o'clock a.m. Thursday, October 1st, 2015, at the Tuscola Health Care Center, Tuscola, Illinois. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. Monday, October 5th, at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home in Tuscola, with graveside services following at the Tuscola Township Cemetery. Irma M. Miller. Irma M. Miller, 100, of Monticello, Illinois, formerly of Seymour and Bement, Illinois, passed away at 12:09 a.m. on Tuesday, September 29, 2015, at the Piatt County Nursing Home, Monticello. Visitation will be held on Monday, October 19, 2015, from 10 a.m. until time of services at the First Presbyterian Church, 249 North Macon Street, Bement. Funeral services will be held on Monday, October 19, 2015, at 11 o'clock a.m., also at the church. Memorial contributions can be made to First Presbyterian Church of Bement. Maxine M. Musselman. Maxine M. Musselman, 95, died July 27, 2015. Celebration of Life services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday in First Presbyterian Church. Luncheon will follow. Mark Allen Shepherd. Mark Allen Shepherd, 61, of Decatur, passed away on Thursday, October 1, 2015, Memorial Medical Center, Springfield, Illinois. A graveside service to celebrate and honor Mark's life will be held at noon on Wednesday, October 7, 2015, at Tower Hill Cemetery, Tower Hill, Illinois. Dawson and Wyckoff West Wood Street Funeral Home is assisting the family with its arrangements. Dale Bertram Smith. Dale Bertram Smith, 70, died unexpectedly on Tuesday, September 29, 2015. A memorial service will be held Saturday, October 17th, from 3 to 6 o'clock p.m. at the Albany Marriott in Albany, New York. Keith H. Wise. Keith H. Wise, 71, of Macon, Illinois, passed away at 6:37 p.m. Thursday, October 1st, 2015, in his residence. A service to celebrate Keith's life will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, October 7, 2015, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Macon, Illinois. Burial will be in South Macon Township Cemetery. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation at the funeral home on Tuesday evening from 5 to 8 p.m. Casual attire is requested by the family for Keith's visitation and services. Memorials may be made to St. Jude Children's Hospital. And now an article from the local pages written by Donette Beckett, Herald and Review staff writer. Those who served. Opening up can be hard for vets. Vietnam War veteran Gordon Shishun said there are three reasons why veterans of the conflict don't like to talk about their experiences. First, it is painful, he said. The veterans have memories as well as physical scars as reminders. Secondly, no one understands the dialogue or experience. We can see it in their eyes, Shishun said. Lastly, and the most difficult reason, people just don't want to hear about it, he said. Now, 50 years after America's ground involvement in Vietnam began, the dialogue is opening, if only just a crack. To honor local Vietnam War veterans, the Herald and Review has begun a special series titled Those Who Served. Each day, a local veteran will be highlighted on the last page of the B section, usually reserved for a look back, history photos. The veteran's profile also will appear daily on heraldreview.com. Meet our first veteran, Army Specialist 4, Bill Bowles, on page B6 of today's Herald and Review. Not since the Civil War had the country seen such division. Many never received their due respect because of the resistance by many back home to the country's involvement in Southeast Asia. This is the Herald and Review's opportunity to help those who came back to tell their stories. Today, veterans are widely esteemed throughout the country. We buy them lunch, give them special seats during parades, and hug them in airports, many of whom are strangers to us. Yet we still know little of what the soldier endured during the time at war in any era. Few veterans, no matter what war, will speak openly about their experiences. "You've got to pry this stuff out of us," Vietnam veteran David L. Corman said. The memories remain fresh for many of the vets. This year, the country will recognize the 50th anniversary of the beginning of the ground war when the first regular U.S. combat units were deployed to Southeast Asia. The conflict was immediately met with rallies, protests, and controversy, and the soldiers were caught in the middle. "Nobody understands how alone you are," Corman said. "The world is going on, and you're just kind of locked away." When the Herald and Review asked veterans for their stories, many shared with various responses. Some are uplifting, some humorous, and many are horrific, but they all have a central theme. "War is hell," veteran Norman Ross said. "As any soldier will tell you, he or she made the decision to protect the freedoms we all enjoy." In his response to the Herald and Review profile, Ross quoted one of the Army mottos, "No mission too difficult, no sacrifice too great, duty first." More than 58,000 military service members died in the war, and more than 300,000 returned with physical injuries. To add to their suffering and those of their families, anti-war rallies and protests throughout the war often targeted soldiers who felt they were only doing their duty as their country had asked. The greatest toll came from the soldiers who came back to a country that could not sympathize with their experiences. Although most can never understand the soldiers' pain, they slowly came to sympathize with their struggles. Today, with the military constantly in harm's way, service members often come home to more support than was available in the past, perhaps shaped by how Vietnam veterans were treated. So many people, from many political points of view, are going out of their way these days to make sure our active military and veterans get all due respect and welcome home celebrations, veteran Willard Suddeth said. There has been a tacit agreement among those people that they will not let that shameful action happen in America again. Those who served in Vietnam feel they not only served their country, but the Vietnamese civilians as well. After returning home, Robert Tyler continued with his life as much as possible. "If I ever doubted that we made a difference, that doubt was erased by a Decatur public school teacher, the son of a Vietnamese refugee," he said. Upon discovering that I had served in Vietnam, he began sending me a thank you card on every Veterans Day, validating my and all other Vietnam veterans' service in his homeland. And from Forsyth, "Alzheimer's Walk carries memories for all who suffer." Written by Allison Petty, staff writer for the Herald and Review. On the purple pinwheel flower representing those lost to Alzheimer's disease, Carol Daniels wrote three names. There was her grandmother, who died from the disease many years ago, and who initially inspired Daniels to become involved with annual Walk to End Alzheimer's. There was her mother, Elaine Lee Hohenstein, who was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia 3 years ago and died in June of last year. Then Daniels added herself with a question mark, an uncertainty and fear understood by anyone with a family history of the disease. "There is no cure. That's the issue," said Daniels, 54, the co-chairwoman of this year's walk, who dyes a striking purple streak in her blonde hair each fall. "Even the drugs, they might slow down the different symptoms, but there is no cure for Alzheimer's." The nationwide fundraiser is an effort toward care, support, and research, a goal that brought hundreds of people to Forsyth Village Park on Saturday. They carried flowers in other colors, too, orange to show support for the cause, yellow for caregivers, blue for someone diagnosed with the disease. Daniels said dementia requires caregivers to work with the sufferer's reality. That can mean stomping on the wavy lines in a rug, pretending to kill what a loved one might see as snakes, or diverting conversation to other topics instead of arguing, which is always futile. Never, never take it personally. They're someday not going to remember you, Daniels said. I think that's the hardest part. You lose them twice with Alzheimer's. You lose them to the disease, and then when they pass away. That's how Ann Snyder experienced the loss of her mother, Betty Mapother, who died in July. Snyder and her daughter, Megan Snyder, attended the walk in honor of Mapother, who taught all of her 7 grandchildren how to play cards, loved taking them shopping, and indulged them with unlimited patience. The disease stole her personality piece by piece. Ann Snyder said it also took a toll on the health of her father, who was her mother's primary caregiver for much of the time. The two died 6 hours apart. Coming to the walk made Ann Snyder feel like she was doing something to make a difference. Because they have no short-term memory, there's no comfort, and there's no lasting joy for those afflicted with the disease, she said. They don't remember what happened the minute before, so if they're scared of something, you can't really help them. If they're happy about something, you can't continue to celebrate the joy of it. Several groups wore matching shirts to show their solidarity. The Gridiron Gang included about 100 people walking in memory of Kathy Hendrickson, who died in January after 9 years with Alzheimer's. She was only 52 when diagnosed and, in the early stages, took to ironing to stay busy and keep her mind sharp. I'd come home from work and she had everything ironed. She had my underwear ironed, chuckled her husband, Ken Hendrickson, principal of St. Teresa High School. Another trick Kathy Hendrickson used was writing out her recipes, and that's why shirts in previous years have featured some of those, too. She always smiled, was always upbeat, her husband said. It was tough on the family and friends, but she's in a better place now. Deanna Chandler and her husband, Duane, walked in honor of her aunt, Nancy Kircher, who is receiving care for vascular dementia in a Taylorville nursing home. They visit her about once a week, often reading to Kircher or coloring with her. The Chandlers hope that research will lead to a cure, or at least a way to stop the progression of the disease, as well as the ability to diagnose it sooner. Before her diagnosis several years ago, Kircher had experienced forgetfulness and mood swings, and sometimes became insistent about facts that her family knew weren't true. It was rough at the start, Deanna Chandler said. Now it's gotten easier for us, I think. Easier for her, because now we know what it is. The local goal was to raise $80,000 for research, and proceeds by Saturday had exceeded $70,000, said Tina Arnold, the senior manager of special events for the Area Alzheimer's Association. Donations can still be made online at alz.org/walk. During opening ceremonies, honorary chairwoman Leslie Kent shared that she was walking for the woman who once taught her to walk, her mother. Kent said she's sure those early steps included plenty of bumps and bruises. Now, as I help her maneuver her new walk in life, she won't remember it as well, Kent said. Does it hurt? Absolutely it does. But the one constant my parents made sure was firmly rooted in me was my faith. That's why Kent said her team was named Feeding Sheep, referring to a passage in the Bible when Jesus tells his disciple Peter to demonstrate love for Jesus by taking care of his people. Today, in that light, this walk is about feeding and leading those who can no longer remember their way, Kent said. To that end, my friends, let's walk, let's live, let's love, let's feed, and let's remember. From Mattoon, an article by Jared Jarman of the Lee News Service, Coles County students tour manufacturing plant with Rauner. High school students from Coles County took time out of school Friday to see a few of the manufacturing jobs the area has to offer. about 138 students from Charleston, Oakland, Mattoon, and Pathway program toured the Coles County Memorial Airport, as well as the Mars Pet Care, Consolidated Communications, and Mattoon Precision Manufacturing, Inc. facilities for the state's first Manufacturing Day. On these tours, students were taught how things operate in each of the manufacturing facilities. Angela Griffin, Coles Together president, said it is important to show students there are career options in manufacturing, and manufacturing facilities need people with training to handle the high-tech equipment within the facility. It was stressed that these positions were available, and employers need skilled, trained workers in their plants. Griffin said there has been a skills gap in the past 3 to 4 years that has stifled and hurt manufacturing in the area. She said employers are looking for people to hire, but people are either unaware of the jobs out there, or they do not have the necessary skills. Governor Bruce Rauner, who attended a tour of the Mattoon Precision facility, said it is important to celebrate manufacturing and support it, especially with 10% of the state workforce involved in manufacturing. Rauner added that manufacturing in Illinois should thrive and the state should not seek ways to hinder its growth. Glenn Pruitt, Mattoon Precision Vice President of Operations, said, "The workforce right now is not equipped to do what we do here." Pruitt added there are jobs, just not the qualified people to fill those jobs. Griffin said this kind of event allows area manufacturers to show the ins and outs of the job and encourage students graduating from high school to either jump into manufacturing jobs or get trained at a place such as Lakeland College and get more specialized education to use in manufacturing. People are going to college and studying in areas that do not equip them to go into manufacturing, Griffin said. Lakeland College President Josh Bullock said it is important to the county that the manufacturing is thriving with a more qualified pool in the workforce. "We are so dependent on manufacturing. In Coles County, about 35% of our employee base is manufacturing-driven. This includes not only people on the floor making products, but also people involved in such jobs as sales and accounting." An article from Decatur by Huey Freeman, staff writer. DNA matches Decatur man to cold case rape. Donovan D. Shelby, 21, of Decatur, was arraigned Friday on a felony count of criminal sexual assault for a rape of a woman in her 40s who was walking along North Main Street one night 3.5 years ago. Shelby was linked to the case by DNA evidence after his DNA was collected when he was convicted June 18th of aggravated domestic battery for breaking the arm of a 2-year-old boy. On April 3, 2012, the woman was walking home on North Main near Marietta Street when an unknown young male approached her. The male started walking with her and talking to her, the victim later told police, according to a probable cause affidavit by a Decatur patrol officer. After walking together a short distance, the male grabbed her left arm and pulled her behind a church located at Main and Packard Streets, the affidavit said. The male then threw her to the ground in a grassy area behind the church. "He forcibly undressed her as she repeatedly told him no," she told police. "Then he raped her and fled on foot." She went to Decatur Memorial Hospital, where a sexual assault forensic examination was performed. DNA evidence was obtained and sent to the Illinois State Police Crime Lab for analysis. A DNA profile was obtained, but there was no match found within the FBI's combined DNA index system. On February 11th, Shelby was arrested on a charge of aggravated battery to a child, great bodily harm, for breaking the left humerus, the upper arm bone of a 2-year-old. After giving two other explanations in that case, Shelby told police he jerked the child toward him and up into the air by the child's left arm, according to a police affidavit. After pleading guilty to one felony count of aggravated domestic battery on May 6th, he was sentenced to a 3-year probation term. as a condition of a felony conviction, Shelby's DNA was taken and entered into the DNA index system. There was a match between the evidence in the cold case and Shelby, which generated a report by the Illinois State Police Crime Lab September 9th. Shelby was arrested September 30th and booked into the Macon County Jail, where he is being held on $75,000 bond. As a condition of his aggravated domestic battery conviction, Shelby is on the Violent Offender Against Youth Registry for a 10-year period. His address is listed in the 200 block of West Packard Street. Law enforcement had another chance to register Shelby's DNA shortly after the rape occurred. He was charged in another felony aggravated battery case for an incident that occurred 16 days before the rape, about 7 blocks away. However, Shelby, who was 17 at the time, pleaded guilty to a lesser charge as a result of a plea deal on June 7, 2012. Because that charge, simple battery, was a misdemeanor, he was not required to give his DNA to be indexed. About 6:55 p.m. March 18, 2012, a 62-year-old man approached Shelby on the sidewalk near the man's residence in the 1600 block of North Union Street. Shelby became upset with him and began to verbally threaten him with bodily harm, said the police affidavit. Shelby then came within inches of him and spit a piece of chewing gum from his mouth, striking the victim in the face. That incident was witnessed by several people, one of whom took a video. The police matched images from the video with a photo of Shelby taken previously at the Decatur Police Department during one of his prior cases. Shelby was arrested April 28, 2012, 25 days after the sexual assault, in connection with that incident. He was released on a signature bond May 16th. On June 7th, he pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 30 days in jail and 24 months of probation. 6 months later, he was charged with a probation violation and sentenced to an additional 30 days in jail. In 2012, 17-year-olds were considered adults in criminal cases. A law categorizing 17-year-olds as juveniles went into effect January 1, 2014. Shelby is due in circuit court for his preliminary hearing in his sexual assault case, October 21st. And recent news, outbuilding destroyed by fire near Stephen Decatur. A wooden outbuilding at Stephen Decatur Middle School was destroyed by fire Sunday night. The single-story structure, about the size of a double garage, was located at the west end of the campus near outdoor games courts and appeared to be used for storage. Firefighters were alerted to the fire about 8:45 p.m. and found flames shooting out of the building when they arrived. The blaze was knocked down quickly, but several fire trucks stayed on scene for more than an hour, mopping up hot spots and dealing with the fire's aftermath. The cause is under investigation, and the main school buildings were undamaged.